Good morning.
May it please the court.
I'm Dan Lynch. I'm representing Jalen Kent and Son in this appeal from the Workers' Compensation Commission.
Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, sir?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to reserve two minutes for rebuttal,
sir.
Please.
Yes.
I respectfully submit that the full commission in this case erred in reversing the deputy commissioner and in finding that the claimant's late filing of a claim for medical treatment for the SI joints was not barred by the statute of limitations. The SI joints is actually the sacroiliac joints, but I'll be referring to it throughout the argument as the SI joint. By way of background, Mr. Kilby was involved in a motor vehicle accident on February 14, 2011. The accident itself was compensable, and the agreed-upon body parts for the workers' compensation claim were fractured ribs, a right leg abrasion, and a forehead laceration. These were the only body parts that were agreed as being compensable. On June 12, 2012, and again on October 11, 2012, the claimant filed new claims for benefits, seeking to add the back and the spine to the case, in addition to the other body parts that are already agreed upon. The hearing with regard to those claims for benefits took place on April 22, 2013. At the hearing, Mr. Kilby essentially amended those claims to also seek benefits for the SI joints for the first time. This claim for benefits, if you will, which was essentially filed at the hearing on April 22, 2013, was filed 2 years and 2 months after the accident date.
If I recall correctly, this was a case where the commission said words to the effect that the symptoms were consistent, were longstanding and consistent, and were evidenced within the two-year period. It was the diagnosis that came late.
Well, Your Honor, that's exactly what happened in the Sadler's case. But not so in this case, no, Your Honor. In this particular case, Mr. Kilby had been treating for the SI joints all throughout the two-year period. As a matter of fact, he actually began treating for the SI joints for an unrelated problem at least 2 years before the accident.
Before the accident. But ultimately, the diagnosis in this case was that the pre-existing condition was aggravated by this accident.
That is correct. And Your Honor, it is correct that the first medical evidence in the case that his pre-existing SI joint condition was aggravated was a report that Dr. Squillante had authored on April 19, 2013, 3 days before the hearing.
Well, doesn't the employer or the carrier have access to these medical records throughout the period of time? So it's not a matter of surprise to see that these symptoms have been treated during the two-year period.
That is correct. The employer had access to the records. The employer was aware of the records, was well aware of the pre-existing condition, and as a matter of fact, with regard to the SI joint and the back, for that matter, the contention all along had been that it's a pre-existing condition that was not materially aggravated by the motor vehicle accident. The fact that the employer was aware of the symptoms, and indeed was aware of the treatment, including the injections that he had throughout, that's actually irrelevant.
But the employer had been paying for those treatments throughout the period.
Some, Your Honor, may have been paid, and certainly some were not, because the decision was made to deny the back as being causally related, and the decision had been made to deny any treatment for the SI joints in conjunction with the back. So because it became evident that we were dealing with a pre-existing condition that there was no medical evidence to establish that it was aggravated. But, of course, the claimant is in the best position to state that my pre-existing condition was aggravated, because he's the one that feels it. It's his condition. He knew the treatment he was getting. The employer knew it as well. He knew the symptoms he had. He knew whether or not those symptoms were aggravated. It was his SI joints. Dr. Scalante testified that the SI joint is part of the pelvis. It connects the sacrum to the ilium on either side, which was an important component to this case, because when Dr. Scalante was deposed post-hearing, because again, this issue about the SI joint didn't come up until the hearing itself. That's when the claim was first filed. The two decisions by the deputy commission that were relevant below were that, number one, the SI joints and the back are separate body parts. They're not the same. And number two, because they're not the same, he didn't timely file a claim for the SI joints. He'd only timely filed a new claim, two new claims over time, over the 2 years, for the back and the spine. Separate body parts, not timely filed. Full commission, on the other hand, though, looked at it and said, well, we're going to rely on Southers, and we're also going to look at the humane and beneficent purposes of the Workers' Compensation Act and determine and find that it was timely filed. And that's why we're here today on our appeal.
And doesn't it boil down to a whether or not there is credible evidence to support the finding of the commission, that is, that the SI joint aggravation was proximately related to the accident and had manifested itself within the two-year period?
We agree that the finding of the finding of the deputy commissioner, which is actually affirmed by the full commission, really isn't even an issue today, is that the back and the SI joint are not related. As far as the aggravation goes, we're not that's not being contested either. That is a factual determination, the fact that the SI joints were aggravated. It's a mixed question of law and fact as to whether the statute of limitations was met by the claimant not filing for the SI joint, until April 22. 2 years and 2 months after the accident. In fact, it's undisputed that the first filing of a claim for the SI joints was April 22, 2 years, 2 months after. This is a violation of the two-year statute of limitations set forth in 65.2601, and it's also a violation of the Supreme Court decision of Shawley versus Shea Ball Construction, which is a 1975 Virginia Supreme Court case that really is the seminal case on the proposition that a claim for body parts must be filed within 2 years of the accident date. Now, as I indicated, the full commission relied on the Corporate Resource Management versus Southers case. And Southers was an en banc decision of this court back in 2008. But Southers is clearly distinguishable from the Kilby case, the case here today. In Southers, we had a housekeeper who was vacuuming. She fell backwards down steps, landed on her left shoulder, and it was a compensable claim. It was accepted as compensable, no dispute in that regard. She was treated for the shoulder, but her pain was not just in the shoulders. The pain was also diffuse. It was across the back. It was in her neck. But no doctor diagnosed her with anything other than a shoulder injury during the 2 years after the accident date. After 2 years, a physician diagnosed her with having a neck injury. It was a cervical facet joint injury for the first time after 2 years. In Southers, in an en banc decision, it was determined that the claimant couldn't have filed for her neck within 2 years because she didn't even know that she had a neck injury. Didn't know about a neck injury until more than 2 years after. Almost a kind of like a discovery rule. Everyone knew about the symptoms. The symptoms were the same over the course of the 2 years. But there was no diagnosis of a neck injury until after 2 years.
Isn't that what we have here, that everyone knew the symptoms all along, and there's no question about that, but the question is that the diagnosis was not made or revealed until 2 months after the statute of limitation.
The diagnosis, Your Honor, was an SI joint condition that had been treated. He was well aware of it, treated regularly since 2009, 2 years before the accident. Causation is not a diagnosis, Your Honor. It's true that medical evidence to causally relate, to show the pre-existing injury was materially aggravated, that was more than 2 years. But the diagnosis was even pre-existed the accident. He was regularly treating, even getting SI joint injections. The diagnosis never changed. In Southers, there was no diagnosis until after 2 years. Here, there was no misdiagnosis.
Right, but what changed was the causal connection between this compensable accident and the aggravation of the pre-existing condition.
Medical evidence, Your Honor, in support of an aggravation of the pre-existing didn't come in until after 2 years. Medical evidence to support that claim, but of course even in a workers' compensation case, you don't even have to have medical evidence to prove a case. You've got the Cridlin versus Dollar General Store decision, which makes it very clear. That's an old case of 20 years ago. That makes it clear you don't even have to have medical evidence to support it. Here, there was no medical evidence until 2 months after two years and 2 months after the accident date. But Southers dealt with a diagnosis of the body part. In Southers, there was no diagnosis of a neck injury until after 2 years. And they said, hey, we can't hold that against the claimant. He didn't even know he had a neck injury. We can't hold it against him. So we're going to decide that it wasn't barred by the statute. Now, I understand the humane and beneficent purposes of the Workers' Compensation Act. However, 65.2601 sets forth a clear statute of limitations and with a 2-year statute of limitations. Shawley versus Shaball makes it clear that the general rule is that you've got to file a claim for all your body parts within 2 years of that accident date. There are few exceptions to that. Southers is one of the exceptions for the reasons that I've mentioned. But this case here today at bar is not one of those exceptions. This is clearly different from Southers, where they had no diagnosis of a neck condition until after 2 years. Here, the diagnosis never changed. The only thing that changed was medical evidence causally relating or essentially establishing or stating that the pre-existing condition was materially aggravated. That is not a diagnosis. Takes it well outside of the rarely used exception in Southers. I respectfully request that the full commission be reversed with respect to the claim for benefits for the SI joint, that be denied as a violation of the 2-year statute of limitations pursuant to 65.2601 and Shawley versus Shaball Construction. They clearly stand for the fact that this claim should be denied as a violation of statute of limitations.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The appellee.
Thank you, Mayor, Police Court. I'm George Townsend. I represent Mr. Kilby. And I did not represent him at the hearing. He was pro se. Attorney Wesley Marshall represented him prior to that hearing, but then was appointed to the commission as a commissioner. And that's why he's not even part of the full commission's opinion, because he had to recuse himself. And that's why Deputy Commissioner Tabb sat on that panel. After the issuance of Deputy Commissioner Mayo's opinion, Mr. Kilby contacted me and asked me if I would represent him on the request for a review and also here, and agreed to do so. Mr. Lynch is, I think he's kind of framed the argument pretty well that, you know, is the claim for the SI joint barred by 65.2-601. One thing that he didn't talk about, though, and was kind of almost in a throwaway paragraph by Commissioner Newman's opinion, was this case that he cited that they had ruled a year earlier in Murga versus Roto-Rooter Services, company, and that's a JCN number. It's just a workers' comp case, and that JCN number is 241-66-97, decided on August 14, 2013, where they had ruled that a low back injury was broad enough to include and did in fact include the claimant's SI joint. And so that was our first point when we requested review. Our point of error was that we did not, Mr. Kilby did not have to distinguish, you know, and say the SI joint is different than the back. Because up until this case, I think every practitioner in workers' comp just assumed that the SI joint was the very tail end of the spinal cord, and that general, you know, definition or description of the back. And in the Sathers case that Mr. Lynch was referencing, they included the shoulder because there was a claim for the arm. And they said, you know what, I believe that's what it was, or maybe it was one of these other cases. But, you know, the shoulder wasn't specifically claimed, but, you know, it's the very top north end of the arm, and we're going to not make that part of it. You know, is it a joint as opposed to a limb? You know, and where do you start cutting that off? I mean, each of us are asking, I guess, this court to split hairs, and we want it to go our way, and he wants it to go his way. And, you know, I don't envy your, you know, job up there. And I think the two cases are the Shawley case and, you know, the Southers case. And if I think that if the full commission would have just said, hey, we're going with our previous rule that the SI joint is part of the back, you know, then we wouldn't have to address this. And so that's our first position, is this court can just agree with that paragraph in the commission's opinion that the SI joint is part of the back. And then we get to, you know, if we have to go into, you know, whether there's an exception to Shawley in this case. Yes, clearly there was treatment and symptoms for both the SI joint and the low back, the lumbar back, from April 1st, 2011 up through and past the hearing and into August of 2013. But it wasn't until Dr. Scalante handwrote that letter that Mr. Kilby presented at the hearing where there was a specific diagnosis, and that this diagnosis is related to the workers, to the work injury, because it aggravated the pre-existing condition. And in Dr. Scalante's deposition, he does say, hey, the SI joint is part of the pelvis, but he also said at that point, for the first time, it really isn't the lumbar back, it's really the instability of the SI joint. And so he was clarifying his letter opinion, you know, that Mr. Kilby presented, you know, at the hearing.
But the treatment for these SI joint symptoms had taken place throughout the two-year period.
Yes, sir. It sure did.
And it was after the fact that the doctor said that treatment was treatment for an aggravation of the pre-existing condition, which aggravation was causally connected to this compensable accident.
Absolutely. And it wasn't until then that he actually put a name on it. Because before, all the notes, if you look at each office note, it references tenderness over the SI joint. And they're injecting the SI joint, and it gives him temporary relief, and he's able to go back and work, and then it wears off and he comes back. You know, there's a consistent, you know, pattern of treatment, and they almost always are the same thing, you know, increased lumbar pain and tenderness over the SI joints. And it wasn't until that handwritten letter that Judge Huff is referencing that we really link it definitively as an aggravation of a pre-existing condition, you know, because of the work accident, and actually give it a name, and that's further clarified in Dr. Scalante's deposition, and I believe Commissioner Newman, you know, referenced that too about the SI joint instability. So we would ask that if there are no further questions, that the commission, that the Court of Appeals affirm the commission's opinion and even take it a step further and rule that the SI joint is part of the back, so we can clarify that.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Some rebuttal? Mr. Lynch.
Yes, thank you. The fact that the SI joint in the back are separate body parts is essentially the law of the case. That's not an issue for this court to decide. That was established below in this case. It is not an issue that is before this court. The SI joint and the back were found to be separate body parts. And what the full commission did in this case was essentially eviscerate the statute of limitations under 601. It eviscerated it. Shawley versus Shea Ball makes it very clear that you've got 2 years to file that claim. Southers, which the full commission relied upon, they relied upon it in error because the facts are so distinguishable. There was no way in Southers that claimant could have filed a timely claim because she didn't know she had a neck injury. In this case, Mr. Kilby knew all along that he had an SI joint condition. It was diagnosed from day one, diagnosed 2 years before the accident. The diagnosis never changed. In effect, the treatment never even changed. But he was alleging an aggravation. He's the one who alleged that. He would know if there was an aggravation. It didn't need Dr. Scolante's April 19, 2013 report to allege.
Well, the amendment was actually made orally at a hearing?
The amendment was essentially made orally before the hearing on April 22, right? As there were preliminary discussions, and Your Honor will note in the transcript that the Deputy Commissioner points out in a paragraph at the beginning of the transcript in the appendix that there was a discussion off the record. And at that time, that's when Mr. Kilby submitted that report. In fact, he gave me a copy of it before we went into the courtroom. And he said, Mr. Lynch, I want to give you this. I got this a few days ago from Dr. Scolante. So it was filed for the first time, but his allegations of an aggravation would have existed for 2 years. He could have done it. He didn't do it. Unlike in Southers, where she couldn't do it, because she didn't know she had a neck injury. He knew he had an SI joint condition, and it's for that reason that we ask that the full commission's opinion be reversed with regard to the finding of the SI joint, and that benefits be denied relative to the SI joint.
Very well, thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel, and thereafter take up the case of Joseph versus Commonwealth.